fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Happy New Year, and welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. 2019 promises to be another action-packed year in the sports world. And in terms of those sporty promises, let's look ahead to next week. Senegal's capital, Dakar, promises to be the hot spot in African football. On January 8th in Dakar, the Confederation of African Football, CAF, will hold its annual awards ceremony. And the following day, January 9th, CAF will name the host country for the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations tournament. Our Voice of America football fans will remember CAF stripped Cameroon of the hosting rights on November 30th, 2018, because of delays in building infrastructure and concerns about security. CAF is expected to select either Egypt or South Africa to be this year's Nations Cup host. Egypt has staged the African football showpiece four times previously, while South Africa has been the Nations Cup host twice, most recently in 2013. In addition, South Africa is the only African country to host the FIFA World Cup, having done so in 2010. Meanwhile, Egypt and Liverpool star Mohamed Salah is favored to retain his CAF Player of the Year award on January 8th in Dakar. The 26-year-old Salah is on a three-man shortlist for the prize, along with Liverpool teammate Sadio Mane of Senegal and Gabon and Arsenal striker Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who was the 2015 African Footballer of the Year. Mo Salah scored 44 goals in 52 matches for Liverpool last season. Mo also scored both of Egypt's goals at the 2018 World Cup in Russia. After being crowned the 2017 African Footballer of the Year, Salah told reporters he has big goals and will strive to get even better.
Since I came as a professional, in my mind, I want to be the best player ever in Egypt in the history. So I know what I want. I know how to do it. I'm working hard every day, improving myself. So that's what I want. So I think I'm going well. I'm doing well at the moment. So I'm going to see even in the future, this one and next one and next one.
Meanwhile, CAF also announced a three-player shortlist for the 2018 Women's African Player of the Year Award. They are Tembe Gatlana of South Africa and the Nigerian duo of Francisco Ordega and Asisat Ashola. Now let's go to Libya, where young women looking to play the world's most popular sport have a place all their own. An all-girls soccer academy in the capital, Tripoli, is looking to break societal norms in the Muslim-majority country that frowns upon women wearing shorts or competing on the same fields as men. VOA's Arash Arabasadi tells us more.
On a soccer field in Libya's capital, girls practice the world's most popular sport. According to its founders, the month-old Al-Tawati Academy in Tripoli is home to the country's first all-girls team.
I chose soccer because it is for everyone, not just for boys. Back when we played in school, they always told us no, girls should not play. But soccer is for everyone. Everyone plays abroad, so everyone should progress and play in Libya too. This is one of our dreams, given that we don't have many dreams.
The girls were mostly recruited through an ad campaign in local schools, and while their parents and coaches are supportive, the conservative society, not as much.
Some people have given me negative feedback on social media, but also have given me advice through these comments. Of course, we take these positive comments with an open heart as we do the negative ones. I have no problem with either of them.
Among the negative comments, girls should not wear shorts.
Of course, Libyan society is conservative. Once we uploaded a photo of the young girls playing, we received many negative comments. They have chosen to dress conservatively. They wore shorts with pants underneath. All Arab countries have female soccer teams made up of young girls, adolescents, or women, except for Libya.
Despite some negative feedback, parents back their daughters.
I'm full of hope that they might take these players and form a team for young girls. I'm glad that I have driven them to these kinds of activities before, such as basketball and tennis. But the harmony was not like it is here with football.
The Libyan women's national team was formed in 1997. It was only accredited for the smaller indoor version called futsal. But players and coaches say they hope FIFA one day recognizes their team so they can compete internationally on the full soccer pitch. Arash Arbasadi, VOA News.
The Voice of America. VOA.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The energetic Andy Edwards chatted with me about some of the African athletes who won big international titles in 2018. And Andy began his look back with an Ethiopian woman winning two gold medals at the IAAF World Indoor Championships in early March.
Well, certainly distance events, the Ethiopian Genzebe Dibaba, one of the Ethiopian Dibaba sisters who have been so prolific in recent years. Genzebe won both the 1,500 metres and the 3,000. She did that distance double. She's been a tremendous runner for several seasons yet, so certainly maintaining the family honour. But I have to say, in terms of African success, I think that the crown was claimed by Ivory Coast, because it was the best ever day for their women sprinters at a championship. Muriel Ahure won the gold in the women's 60 metres, and runner-up in that sprint was Marie-José Talou. And Ahure has had to come through tough times because of injury the last couple of years, but she felt confident going into the World Indoor Championships.
No, I wasn't surprised. I mean, I ran the times in practice, but I was just so happy that I was able to put three perfect races together and then finally do it here, because it only counts if the world sees it, not when you're running, you know, in an indoor gymnasium in Houston, Texas. So I'm just so excited.
Now, as for the silver medalist at the World Indoors in Birmingham, well, Marie-José Talou of Ivory Coast gave herself a fine base for the outdoor season, because later on in the European summer, she ran 10.85 for the 100, and that was equal fastest, along with the Briton, Dina Asher-Smith, the European champion, as the fastest woman over the 100 metres in the world. Looking back to those World Indoor Championships and the 60-metre final for women, Talou gave credit to her teammate Muriel Ahure for her perseverance.
We are just happy because, you know, this is not and never happened in World Championship to African, like in sprint. So I'm just happy to have both gold and silver medal. So.
And for you and Muriel, it looks great for the outdoor season as well.
Yeah, I'm happy for her. I'm happy for her because she have really 2 years bad. So this is like a gift for her. So I'm just happy for her.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I'm talking with the energetic Andy Edwards in London about the year in athletics. Still with Birmingham and the world indoors, Andy, there was also silver for Luvo Manyanga, South Africa's long jump world champion. And Luvo went on to win the Commonwealth Games title in April. What did you make of those games on Australia's Gold Coast?
Well, there were many good performances, of course. Our Commonwealth Games, not the level of the Olympic Games or World Championships, but you can rely on some good and promising performances from some of the younger stars coming up. But it was also notable for the absence of some stars, especially the road runners, because those games on the Gold Coast in Australia were happening slap bang in the middle of the spring marathon season, when we have those marathons like London, Boston, Paris, etc. Certainly there were some outstanding displays at those Commonwealth Games, and for once Uganda matched Kenya on the men's side in the distance events, with Joseph Cheptegei doing the 5 and 10,000 metre double. But the Kenyans had their sixth consecutive clean sweep of the medals in the steeplechase, led by the extraordinary Conseslus Kipruto. One of the greatest performances I've ever seen was the Diamond League final in Zurich in Switzerland in August. Conseslus Kipruto, hot favourite, dominant runner, but early in the race, over 3,000 metres steeplechase, he loses his left shoe.
And he wins
that Diamond League final, and it goes down to a sprint finish running with one shoe. Well, I think any of us who do any kind of running know how tough it is to... I mean, imagine, I'm not going to go out the door later today and try and run with only one shoe. And there you've got a world-class athlete, world-class competition. He loses his one shoe early in the race, has to run, well, almost seven laps without it, and then wins a sprint finish. Kansalsa Kipruto, Kenyan steeplechaser extraordinaire.
Andy, South Africa's two-time Olympic champion, Caster Semenya, she was dominant as ever to win the women's 800 meters title at the Commonwealth Games. Semenya continued in the same fashion in the outdoor season. But Andy, there's undoubtedly controversy around Semenya and the debate about gender in general. How do you see the situation?
Well, I think we all recognize this is an immensely sensitive issue. Hyperandrogenism is not just about Caster Semenya on her own. There are other athletes affected. And in the world of athletics, just like any sport, there can be whispers and rumors going around. And the world governing body, the IAAF, is attempting to regulate this immensely sensitive subject. And again, it's no brilliant insight from me to say there's no really easy solution in prospect, because if some athletes, and this is where Caster Semenya comes into the headlines, are if they are going to be required to take medication to reduce their testosterone level to be at, if I'm putting inverted commas, at the same level as other competitors in the women's events, well, of course, we can imagine some lawyers saying, hang on, this is whatever you want to call it, restraint of trade, injury to my personal rights. But on the other hand, I've heard, and this is saying in public, some elite athletes, women athletes, saying we don't feel the current situation is right, and also saying publicly, to be quoted, we feel we're competing against some rivals who are not women as we are. So no simple solution. No doubt about it. Caster Semenya is an outstanding, extraordinary performer. So dominant, 800 metres. I mean, barring injury, I don't see anybody getting close to her for the next few seasons. And she has her supporters. But I don't think anybody who raises a what you might call a critical voice, or a voice of saying, hang on, is this current situation acceptable, is either being racist or antagonistic towards Caster or any other woman athlete. Situation is fraught with problems, and I have to say I'm glad I'm someone who doesn't have to be finding a solution.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm talking with the energetic Andy Edwards about the year in athletics. Andy, while the Commonwealth Games were taking place in Australia, the month of April was also full of its usual busy schedule of marathons. We had extreme weather conditions in Boston, sleet, gusty winds. Many of the elite dropped out, and Japan's Yuki Kawauchi won the men's race, and the USA's Desi Linden took the women's title. Andy, you watch Boston from afar, but were they the worst weather conditions you've seen at a major marathon?
Yes. I mean, following that, as you say, Sonny, following Boston Marathon, the great race on Patriots Day in New England, I've never seen anything to match it. And all credit to Yuki Kawauchi of Japan, the men's winner. You know, in Japan, he's described as a citizen runner because Japanese distance running has very strong ties with the major corporations, the companies who have teams for the elite runners and fund them. Kawauchi is the one exception on the Japanese running scene. He has a full-time job. He's an administrator in a school, and he's become known in Japanese, and of course the translation is citizen runner, because he doesn't have that corporate support. Now, I think, to be realistic, he's never going to break the world record. He's never going to be up there alongside Eliud Kipchoge in a race. But he's a tough, tough runner. He's renowned for how many marathons he does. He's a frequent racer. And also looking at the women's winner, Desi Linden, strong, consistent runner. And the key factor in Boston this year, as you say, Sonny, extreme weather. And in a sense, without denigrating Kawauchi and Linden, who won, why did the rest of the elite, because these two certainly are elite runners, why did they drop out? Now, when you're looking at the pictures of Boston, you can see a lot of the runners are kitted out as if they're doing a long training run. I mean, it's like a case of these were conditions where you're wearing tracksuit tops and tracksuit trousers. And I think it's understandable that the elite who dropped out, sometimes they came in for criticism. And of course, many of the elite are East Africans. But this is their profession. When they realised that not only were they not going to win, but it was really going to be tough out there, you can always think, well, save my energy for another day. And that explains why some runners, especially on the women's side, coming through second and third, were not big names, not household names, because these are runners who are pretty good, but they're not at the very top. But certainly, I think it was in a way healthy. You wouldn't always want conditions like that. But it's very good, I think, in the marathon, and Boston has a great course, hilly, very demanding, that it's not always about can we have a world record, can we break the course record. This was competition, and anybody following Boston, whether it was online or watching TV pictures, would be thinking, what's going to happen next? And that's good.
Andy, after Boston, we had the London Marathon. Kenyan star Eliud Kipchoge, the world record holder, won his third London title. But Mo Farah finished third. And Mo looks to have moved to a new level at the marathon, hasn't he, Andy?
Oh, definitely. Mo Farah with that third place. He broke the British record, ran 2:06, and improved on that later in the year. He showed he really is a marathon runner. And credit to Farah that he tried to take the race to Eliud Kipchoge. I mean, he was trailing, but it wasn't as if he was just running for third. Eliud Kipchoge is, well, the best marathon runner of the modern era, and quite probably the best ever, even better than Abebe Bikila, the Ethiopian, who won two consecutive Olympic golds in the marathon, 1960 and 1964. And of course, when we're looking back 50-odd years and more, when I say times, the whole world of marathon running is very different in that there were fewer races. There was more track competition. You saw marathon runners less frequently. But Eliud Kipchoge, the way he develops, the way he works with his management team and his coach, Patrick Sang, is just so impressive. And indeed, this was for him, running 2:04 in London in April, his third win in the British capital. And it meant something really special to Eliud Kipchoge.
I think winning in London for the third time, actually, is a big achievement, very big achievement. That's a massive achievement, I can say. And yesterday was history. I won London for the third time and ran the second fastest time in London, and also won World Airport Marathon Majors. So it's a massive, huge achievement yesterday.
We are in the middle of what could be called the Olympic cycle. I mean, you're the Olympic champion in Rio 2016, but Tokyo is coming fast, 2 years away. Do you have every plan, and does you and your coach have every plan to be on that start line in Tokyo to defend and with the aim of retaining your Olympic marathon title?
I think in Tokyo, I would love to be in the start line. Hopefully, yes.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I'm talking with the energetic Andy Edwards about the year in athletics. Andy, you also had a chance to talk with Eliud Kipchoge's coach, Patrick Sang, after his London win. How important is their partnership?
It is a vital part. I think Eliud Kipchoge would be an outstanding runner, whoever his coach was, whoever his management team were. But, you know, you get those situations in life, in sport, in business, politics, wherever you like to look, in art, in performing, in singing, where 1 plus 1 really does equal 2, and it's not 1.5 or 2.3, it's 1 and 1 equals 2. And Patrick Tsang was a top runner himself, Olympic silver medal in the steeplechase in 1992 in Barcelona, and lived in the same kind of small village town as Eliud Kipchoge. And I know I've interviewed Eliud and talking about how when he was a boy, he would see Patrick Tsang running and thinking, ooh, that's Patrick Tsang, you know, the famous Patrick Tsang. And clearly, Patrick Tsang is an astute coach and has developed the relationship with Eliud. And they've grown together. And it was interesting, yes, Patrick Tsang, after his London win, was talking about how Eliud has developed in the time they've been together. Because let's not forget, Eliud Kipchoge won a world title at 5,000 metres on the track, beating Kenenisa Bekele way back 2003, all of 15 years ago in Paris. So that's how long they've been a kind of in contact as a team. And interesting that Patrick Tsang, the coach, said, breaking 2, that attempt to break 2 hours for the marathon on the Monza Formula One track in May 2017, well, Eliud Kipchoge got very close. He ran just 25 seconds outside 2 hours, and it's not recognised as a marathon by the IWF because pacemakers were employed, and they would, like, teams of pacemakers who would come in, like being substituted and come out, etc. So it was all geared up for Kipchoge's attempt to break 2 hours. But still, Patrick Tsang, as the coach, believes that gave Eliud a mental strength to know what he could do in future.
Coming out of Monza's experience last year, he believed as an athlete that human is not limited. And I think these times are not limiting factors as far as his mind is concerned. And I think he's yet to realize his full potential, but he does not believe in limits.
Andy, as you remember, Vivian Chariot won the women's title in the London Marathon, a track star who won the Olympic 5,000 meters in 2016. Vivian chopped 4 minutes off her personal best to run 2 hours, 18 minutes and 31 seconds in London. Vivian showed the value of patience in the marathon.
I learned a lot of lessons last year because I was still fresh from track and field. And if you find like track and field, you don't have to leave somebody to cover like that. So I was just closing Mary. And I didn't think that Mary is a different person. He has been running for marathon for a long time. And for me, it was my first time too. Yeah, the other day, we decided with my manager, Ricky Sims, and my husband, that I have to be patient. I have to go with 69 the first half, and I did what they told me, and it works very well. And I trained well since last year because we decided to change some things, and it worked very nice.
That's Kenyan athlete Vivian Chariot, the 2018 women's champion at the London Marathon. And don't forget, Vivian is also the reigning Olympic champion in the women's 5,000 meters race. And thanks to the energetic Andy Edwards for his insights on the year in athletics. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Finally, American star Floyd Mayweather came out of retirement briefly on New Year's Eve to score a lucrative victory in an exhibition boxing match in Japan over kickboxer Tenshin Nasukawa. Mayweather knocked Tenshin to the canvas 3 times in the first round, leading the Japanese fighter's corner to throw in the towel. Afterwards, Mayweather had this to say.
You know, I don't want to say this was a fight because if it was a fight, it would have been 12 rounds. It was it's supposed to be 9 minutes of action, but it didn't go 9 minutes. But Tenshin, a young, hungry lion, a true champion. I take my hat off to him for even getting that square circle with a guy like myself with so much experience.
So much experience and so much money, Floyd Mayweather was paid an estimated $9 million for that exhibition. And that wraps up the New Year's Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Gwen Uten. Thanks also to VOA engineer Thomas Blondet. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Happy New Year! And that's the sunny side of sports.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello! This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This is Science in a Minute.
It is expected that one day in the future, people will touch down and walk on Mars. There are also those such as Elon Musk of SpaceX who are working on ways to build and maintain human colonies on the red planet. But there are a number of challenges that block the pathway for human exploration of our planetary neighbor. A group of experts recently met in London to discuss the social and psychological aspects of traveling to and living on Mars. According to the meeting's lead organizer, Federico Caprotti of the University of Exeter, the biggest hurdles to Mars settlement are not technical but psychological. Those attending the meeting discussed such issues as humans developing interplanetary jet lag, the lack of the ability to be able to communicate in real time with Earth, and, of course, the inevitable personality clashes between members of the colony. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
VOA News. VOA.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.